please open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes. We're still in chapter 1, making our way through the entire book between now and next March. Ecclesiastes was written by, I believe, by Solomon, probably given a later update a little bit later on, probably about 600 years later on, in order for us to be able to discover the importance of keeping God's center in our lives, because if we don't, we fail to understand the significance and the purpose of life itself. If we just go through life learning, if we just go through life working, if we just go through life living without any context, without any eternal significance, we really will find our lives, as he says, meaningless or futile or empty or purposeless. And he doesn't want that to happen to us. He wants us to live our lives with purpose and with meaning. And for those of you who are Hillsdale College students, this message ought to be especially pertinent to you since you're in the middle of your education or... Well, no, you're in the middle of your education no matter where you are. And it all ought to be pertinent for all of us because all of us ought to keep on learning, especially in the world in which we live. If you fail to keep on learning, you'll find yourself left behind very, very, very quickly. Someone came to me after the first service and said, "Pastor Keith, do you understand that the national average of people after they've received their formal education, whether that's high school or college or doctorate or whatever it is, after they've received their formal education, from that point on to the rest of their life, the national average is to read one book." Now, if that's true, and it applies to you, what? Are you crazy? Okay, then I've offended the national average. They beat into our brains in seminary. They beat into our brains in the conference. Readers are leaders. And even if you read only to lead yourself, you need to read. You need to expand your understanding of the horizons of life beyond who you are if you want to ever be more than you currently are. Some of you may think that Solomon just got his wisdom because God said, "I'll give you anything you want." And Solomon said, "Great deal, Lord, give me wisdom." And God went, poof, and there wisdom came upon Solomon all of a sudden. We learn from today's text that wasn't the case at all. Now, God enhanced his ability to take wisdom in. God gave him the mental faculties and the experiences in order to process wisdom. But folks, that's not how wisdom came to Solomon. It was just poof, and all of a sudden he began, "Oh, well, I'm really wise." It's not how it happened. He worked at it. He labored. He was intense. In fact, the Hebrew words here show someone who is driven by the desire to obtain wisdom and knowledge. We ought to be as well. And hopefully today we'll give you a context in which to understand and process all that. Because if you don't have that process, if you don't have that context in which to take wisdom in, you'll be like, what's his name? Jaden Smith. How many of you heard or received the text from Jaden Smith? About four of you. God in his providence is so sweet. This is what he had to say. Quote, "School is a tool to brainwash the youth, and education is rebellion. If everybody in the world dropped out of school, we would have a much more intelligent society." That sounds like the sayings of a 15-year-old. You don't find that amusing. 4 million people received that tweet. 4 million. And unfortunately, it reflects the ideas and thinking of a lot of people. Talk to any high school or middle school teacher who's been around more than 10 years, and they will tell you the labors and the struggles that they have to try to motivate their students, because most students don't want an education. And if you're a Christian and you don't want to learn, you need to take a long, hard look in the mirror to find out whether you really are a Christian or not. Because, folks, this is your Father's world. And if you have any affection at all for your Father, you ought to want to know what he's made. This is not rocket science. But I'll tell you what, we live in a world in which people have no context by which to motivate them to learn other than, oh, I'll get a great job, or I'll be prestigious in my community. You get an education for those two reasons, and you'll soon find out it's empty and meaningless and void, especially as you reach the last 10 minutes of your life. Solomon wants you to project your life well beyond this life. He wants you to understand the context in which knowledge and education and wisdom can have an eternal context in which you can understand it makes a difference for all of eternity. And Jesus himself said that we will give an account for every word that we've ever spoken. Do you not think that you'll give an account for everything you've ever learned? I think we will. And so listen very, very carefully as Carol Haviland comes and reads to us from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. Listen very, very carefully to all that he has to say. We're going to tear this thing apart and talk and cover probably about half of it today.
Please stand for the reading of God's Word. I once had a college professor who said, "Education is the only thing people pay for that they don't want." Okay. Starting with verse 12. "I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, 'Look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge.' Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom, and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief." The reading of God's Word.
And your happy students can be seated. I wonder how many of your teachers begin their class by saying, "Welcome to sorrow and grief." We're going to find out what Solomon means about that. In fact, I'm pretty convinced we're going to be able to find out what Solomon means by that. The question before the house is this. What is the teacher trying to tell us this week in Ecclesiastes? I believe the answer is this. Wisdom, knowledge, and learning in and of itself is meaningless, empty, and futile. Knowledge from under the S-U-N sun gives grief. Knowledge from under the S-O-N in the fear of the Lord gives life. Folks, if education in and of itself could bring life, could bring meaning, could bring peace and tranquility, could bring significance, then college campuses would be the most utopian world place in all the world. Is that true? Now, maybe Hillsdale is. But the rest of the world, it is not. The rest of the world finds college campuses filled with turmoil and strife and angst and frustration and suicide. The word for the day is knowledge. We need it, but you need a context by which you achieve it, by which you gain it, by which you bring it into your life. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. Proverbs says, Psalm says, several places in the scriptures it talks about that. And if you don't start with the fear of the Lord as a context for what you're learning things, then what the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying is your life will be filled with meaningless and emptiness. Here in America, we've made the fear of the Lord an obstacle to people obtaining knowledge, obtaining wisdom. In fact, we forbid it. Can it be any wonder that we have a crisis in education? And folks, just a clue, in case any of you decide to be politicians or government workers or any educators like that, you can pour all the money you want to into education, but it will not bring a benefit until you have a purpose for learning. And if it's just to get a better job, And if learning is just in order to rung myself up a little higher than my next door neighbor, people will see through that in a heartbeat. Because there's a lot of people out there got great jobs with no high school education at all. And if you can't show them through your life and through just reason itself that education and learning and knowledge has to be more than just earning more money, has to be more than just raising my prestige and reputation in the sight of others. Folks, not only is Christianity doomed, but civilization in the West is doomed. And I hope to be able to show you that by the end of today. Because Ecclesiastes and the writer Solomon, I think, is spot on to putting his finger in our chest and saying, you all have got a problem. And until you get your educational system screwed around and start to give a real focus and a meaning to them, you're going to continue to have problems. Okay, here it is. What is the teacher trying to tell us this week in Ecclesiastes? One, knowledge under the sun, just here on earth, without any context with God, divorced from God, brings grief and is futile. Look what he says. Verse 18, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. How is this possible? This is not rocket science. If you've got a good education in music, if your ear has been trained in music, the most sorrowful and grief-stricken thing you can do is go to a seventh grade band performance. Some of you have had that experience. My daughter, she was a fairly good musician. My oldest daughter, Jody. And when we transferred from Florida, which had an outstanding music program, and we transferred up north to less than outstanding music program, and she played in the high school band, the first concert I came home from, I said, Gene, I'm not sure I can do this again. It was horrible. I was a music major in college, and I played musical instruments pretty much all my life. I wish I could show you. I have goose pimples up my back right now thinking about going to that concert. Why? I knew better, and I was frustrated and grief-stricken and sorrowful that what is supposedly music was nothing but torment. I watched a football game yesterday. A college football game. In which it was the fourth quarter, and the team that I really would like to have had an interest in winning was down by 4 points with 3 minutes to go. And it was fourth and 20. Fourth and 20. And the quarterback has the ball and is looking downfield, and the pocket breaks down, and so he scrambles and runs out of bounds. It's fourth and 20. The clock means nothing now. I was screaming at the TV. Just chuck the ball! They call it Hail Mary for a reason. You throw it and pray. He ran out of bounds with the ball. Basically saying, well, I guess this isn't going to work. He didn't even try! I could have killed him. Why? I know too much of the sport. Most people watch it and say, well, that's too bad. They're not going to win now. You didn't even try! My mom made sure that I got an education in every possible discipline that she could in order to bring sorrow and grief into my life. Gene knows. I know just enough to be dangerous in everything. But you know what? If it's the context is not imposing your will on others, if the context of your knowledge and your and what you know is to make the world a better place, it doesn't have to be frustrating. It doesn't have to be grief-stricken. It doesn't have to be sorrowful. But folks, if you learn a lot and your context is not that towards what God intended for you to be, God's representative on the earth in order to, for His will to be done here on earth as it is in heaven, your life will be filled with sorrow and grief. The more you know, the more you also find out you don't know. I don't care what discipline it is. The more you go down the path of that discipline, the more you realize, holy cow. I'll never forget when they had the Hubble telescope. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s mostly. 50s not so much. I was just an idiot then. Well, I was an idiot. Well, never mind. But I remember, the Hubble's going to answer all our questions. Oh, man, were they surprised. It just opened up millions more questions. Isn't it great that our knowledge never ends? That we can pursue the world, the universe that God has given us, and just find out really cool and amazing things for eternity? I really believe that's what heaven is going to be. Is God revealing us more secrets every day? And we go, wow, this is great, God. What's going to happen tomorrow? Oh, you won't believe it. Oh, I can't wait. And some of you are looking at me like, really? You think that's heaven? Please don't go if you don't think that's what heaven is. Because, folks, I'm convinced that's what it'll be like. Just day after day of being amazed all over again at the infinite, majestic universe that God has created. But if you look at your knowledge here on earth merely as a means to gain economic revenue and merely as a means to gain status, and the more you know, the more you realize you don't know, it'll bring sorrow and grief. I like to go to Walmart and check through the self-checkout thing. I can move faster. Some of you may not know, but time is of the essence of me. That's why I speak fast. I try to get 2 hours of message into 40 minutes. And most Sundays I'm successful, some Sundays not so much. But ever since I ran cross country and track, time has always been, well, my mom and dad, my mom especially, beat into me. Keith, you need to make better use of your time. So I try to make really good use of time. I try to make good use of your time. That's why all the sermon notes are there. So that you can have something of substance and take and revisit it over and over and over again and make good use of the 40 minutes that you're here listening to this message. So I'd go through the Walmart checkout in order to help. But here lately, I've been really frustrated with man's knowledge. In fact, it's brought a lot of sorrow and grief in my life. Do you know they check for ID to buy Bondo? You know Bondo, the stuff that you patch up cars in order to patch up the holes? They had to check my ID. They had to check my ID. I don't look like I'm 21. I bought a pint of Rust-Oleum paint. Check the ID. I bought some decongestant. Check the ID. Why? Because man has used the knowledge of what he knows or part of those ingredients to make hallucinogenic drugs, to make all sorts of other things that have brought sorrow and grief on mankind, and as a result, brought sorrow and grief on me. Listen, our education can take us and open up absolute wonderful worlds if we're living in harmony, in fear of the Lord, and using that education in harmony with the world God has created. But it can also bring grief and destruction and devastation if we're working contrary to the purposes of God. 2. What is the teacher trying to tell us here in this week of Ecclesiastes 2? Knowledge in and of itself cannot fix the effects of the fall nor unravel the mysteries of life. Verse 15, what is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. Education in and of itself, knowledge in and of itself, cannot be a moral compass for your life. Education and knowledge in and of itself cannot be a moral compass in your life. You need some external, intrinsic, transcendent value system in order to allow you to know whether or not this knowledge is being used in harmony with that which is moral and ethical, or whether it's being contrary to what's moral and ethical. But it all determines and is built on something outside of yourself. And the writer of Ecclesiastes understood that. That's why he's trying to get you to realize that unless you understand that your knowledge and your education is built on God, the fear of the Lord, then folks, you really aren't going to get anywhere at all. In fact, what you learn may be your destruction. This became really, really clear to me when I lived in Florida. How many have ever been to Florida? How many have ever been to Florida and encountered love bugs? Oh, they're a wonderful creature. Love bugs come out, is it October and May, baby? I think they come out in October and May. We lived down in Florida for 3 years, and love bugs are prolific in Florida. They have swarms. If you go in Florida at the rest stops and the turnpikes, they actually have washing places to wash your windshields off, because they'll get so many of them on your windshield that even your windshield wiper is just like spreading grease. It's just amazing. And so they have to wash off these love bugs because they come in such swarms. I remember the first time we saw a swarm going from where we lived in St. Cloud to Melbourne Beach. And we come up and said, wow, that looks like a dust storm going across. It was all bugs. And we hit that and all over the front windshield. And we had to stop and scrape this crud off. And worse yet, they're really acidic. So when they hit your car, if you don't clean them off within 24 hours, it creates a pit in your finish, because the acid in their bodies eats that away. They were introduced into the United States in order to kill the med flies in the citrus industry. They have no natural enemy in Florida. Now think about that for a second. Great educational idea, just didn't think through of all the implications. Folks, there's a lot of stories like that out there. Hundreds of stories like that out there. Education, knowledge in and of itself doesn't mean that you're going to go down the right path. It must be built within the context of the fear of the Lord to understand how you are or are not working in harmony with the God of the universe. Otherwise, you could find yourself doing that which is totally contrary to God's purposes and then be frustrated. Listen, our recent modern history ought to demonstrate that more clearly than anything else, because the most educated people in the 1930s was Nazi Germany. In fact, there were a lot of people, H.G. Wells was one of them, that wrote from the end of the 19th century into the early part of the 20th century, kept writing about how all our education and all our knowledge is going to achieve for us a utopian society. So that by the beginning of the 21st century, there'll be no more death, there'll be no more sickness, there'll be no more heartache. Have we achieved any of that? We aren't even close. In fact, there have been a lot of people say that we're further away than ever. Because knowledge will not bring a utopian society. We have to have something to check our hearts. Look what Albert Einstein said. What terrifies us is not the explosive force of the atomic bomb, but the power of the wickedness of the human heart. We have built within us certain ways of processing information. It's called a worldview. We have paradigms in our hearts, in our minds. We have perspectives. And if those perspectives are not in harmony with the God of the universe, we can actually work really, really hard to go in a way contrary to God's purposes. One of the really, really fascinating things I came across in my reading over the last 10 years ago was 2 pages worth of mathematic formulas. And what those mathematic formulas were doing was showing the legitimacy and proving that all the planets in the sun revolve around the earth. Okay, some of you haven't caught up with me yet. Mathematical proof, actual formulas to show how the planets in the sun revolve around the earth. Now listen, some of you are now starting to catch on. You go, wait a minute, did I hear him right? Yes, that's the whole point. You can prove anything if you're educated enough and push hard enough. Just look at the great philosophers who go in totally different ways and are perfectly logical in every step of the way, but their premise is different. How is that possible? That someone as bright and as intelligent as Bertrand Russell and Thomas Aquinas could go in totally different ways. The beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of the Lord. You must start there if your wisdom and your knowledge and your understanding and your education is going to ever have purpose and meaning and hold up for you. Oh, I wish I could do a Spockian mind meld right now, because I could save a half hour, but I'm going to do this real quick. There was one time a book that used to be required reading for a lot of students coming out of Hillsdale College. It was Structures of Scientific Revolution by Thomas Kuhn. For a while, it seemed like every student I ran into had read it, but now here lately, it doesn't seem like. So whatever prof was assigning it either doesn't assign it anymore or else it's been gone. But it's a shame. It's an absolutely wonderful book. Basically, it's this. Thomas Kuhn says that the major revolutions that take place by people who are outside the discipline. Here, it's real simple why. If you're within the discipline, let's say microbiology, and you are taught how to think about microbiology, how to process microbiology, how to research microbiology, you have developed a box on how you approach microbiology. But someone outside of that box, maybe someone who's in nuclear physics or someone that's in engineering, comes and looks at microbiology, all of a sudden they see things that you don't see because they have a new, clear perspective on it. Folks, that's just as true as your spiritual life as well. That's why you ought not to listen only to Pastor Keith. You ought not listen only to C.S. Lewis. You ought not to listen only to Alistair Begg or Tim Keller or anybody. They've all got their boxes. I've got my box. What you need to listen to is the Lord. I tell you on occasion, I know that 10 years from now, I'm going to come back and say, you know, on September 22nd, 2013, I preached a sermon to you on philosophy, you know, loving wisdom. Oops. There's a couple of points in there I'd really like to retract. If I knew them now, I'd retract them now. I believe what I'm telling you is the word of the Lord. I believe what I'm telling you is true. But folks, I may be wrong. God is never wrong. You look at Him. You process your information through His Word. You process your information through His grid. Not through Pastor Keith. I'm just a tool to allow you to be able to hopefully hear from the Lord. Let's go on. Number three. What is the teacher trying to tell us? This is a short one because we're actually going to talk about it more next week. Madness and folly are also just as futile as wisdom and knowledge in attempting to give permanence, meaning, and significance under the sun. You're saying, what? Madness and folly? What idiot would think that madness and folly could give significance? Try Nietzsche. Try Hemingway. Try Bertrand Russell. Try Sartre. Try Albert Camus. Why? Because when they kept God out of their worldview and looked at everything as being meaningless, they said you can only find significance in an irrational way, just by assigning significance. Being courageous in the fact that we mean nothing. That's madness and folly. And we're going to talk a lot more about it next week. So if this fascinates you at all, by the way, think. Between now and next week, we're going to talk about hedonism, about pleasure and how it's empty outside of God. Think about how in the world can you ever have a meaning relationship with another person? How you can ever have a meaningful desire and love for music? How you can ever have a meaningful and significant appreciation for food if there is no God? It's going to be fun. Well, that's next week. Okay, conclusion. What does this message have to do with Christ and me? A, knowledge that is in the context of love and the fear of the Lord brings life. That's what the writer of Proverbs says in 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Also remember what Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. We've got to beware that we're not acquiring knowledge just to make ourselves bigger in the eyes of other people. We need to acquire knowledge in order to build up other people. I remember when I was a kid, we used to collect baseball cards, and somewhere in my world, I have a big set of baseball cards that would easily pay for all my college education if I could just find them. I put them in the attic when I went to school back in 1972, and I've not seen them since. My mom thinks that somebody came in and stole them. I'll pre-pray for them, because if I ever meet them in a dark alley, it won't be pretty. But here's what's fascinating about those baseball cards. When we as kids, back in the early mid-60s, kids would come to school and have the entire contents of information on the baseball card on that back. They would have it memorized. Oh, look, I got an alkaline. His batting average in 1966 was... His batting average in 1967 was... His batting average in 1968 was... He had this many home runs in the 66. He had this... I'm going... Dude, we didn't use the word dude then, but that must have taken you hours to memorize all that information. Why would you do that? Especially now, when you live in a day and age which most people don't even know who Al Kaline is and is. You don't know what's really frustrating? I had a minor in physics in college. I burned all my physics books. Because 10 years after I graduated from got done with college, they're all obsolete. So you science majors, cheer up. Talk about futile. Talk about meaningless. Talk about empty. No. Talk about exciting. We live in a world in which the information about the God of the universe is coming at us so fast, we can't even keep up with it. This ought to be a great endeavor, not a depressing one. This ought to be an exciting time. But if you are looking at it only for the money that it will generate, if you're looking at it only for the status that it will give you, it will be meaningless. It will be frustrating. But if you look at it as a chance to understand the God of the universe and what He's created, and better understand how it applies to me and the world in which I'm living, nothing could be better. B. Am I done with A? No! I have one more. Stay on A. Good. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 2. The Apostle Paul says this, "If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have the faith that I can move mountains, but I do not have love, I am nothing." Paul understood you can have buku knowledge. Paul himself says in Philippians chapter 3, listen, he was on the fast track to becoming the greatest teacher in all of Israel. He had the equivalent of 3 PhDs by the time he was 23. He was set to become Gamaliel's successor. And Gamaliel was the greatest teacher of all time at that particular time in Israel. And Paul was the man. What does he say about his education? What does he say about his knowledge? Philippians chapter 3, it was dung. I'd use another S word, but it wouldn't be appropriate here. But it was refuse. For all of you people looking in line, this is it. Listen. Paul understood. If I'm just doing this to advance myself, there'll be a day where myself doesn't matter. But if I'm doing this to advance the eternal kingdom, that'll be there forever. And I can bask in the reality that I learned what I learned for the building of God's kingdom, not for my own gain, not for my own financial advantage, not for my own reputation. Okay, now you can go to B. What does this message have to do with Christ and me? B, all your learning, your education, and knowledge under the sun will only end up becoming empty, futile, and meaningless unless you can give it an eternal context, which is only available under the S-O-N. At the time of Jesus, the Greek philosophers were trying to find some way to bring cohesive understanding to all their knowledge. In fact, Socrates quite often talks about the futility of knowledge and the frustration that they had in trying to find meaning and significance to the knowledge that they were pursuing. And so there's a word that the Greeks had assigned for this one thing that would bring purpose and meaning. It was called the logos. And the Greeks understood that if they could find the logos, then really all of the significance and meaning of life could be hung on that one thing and would carry us into a real meaningful and purposeful life. John begins his letter, his gospel, by this. In the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of men. It brought understanding to everything else. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. You have to have a relationship with Jesus in order for the light bulb to go into your life, in order for you to make the connections to your education and your knowledge to make it meaningful, to really bring you life. Otherwise, you'll be doing it only for the money, you'll be doing it only for the status, and you'll find out that it's going to be empty. And if you don't believe that's true, I double dog dare you to look at the really, really powerful people in the world who have gained the money and gained the status and see what it's done for them. Because outside of Christ, they all find it empty and meaningless. And the writer of Ecclesiastes is going to hammer on that theme between now and March. So if you don't like this theme, you probably better find another place to go to church between now and then, because that's what you're going to hear. You must have a relationship with Christ in order for you to understand life, in order to understand your education, in order for you to understand knowledge. Look at what Paul says, Colossians chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. My purpose is that you may be encouraged in heart and united in love, so that you may have the full riches of complete understanding, in order that you may know the mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. That is a huge statement. He's saying that outside of Christ, you don't have a clue. You don't know what real learning is. You don't know what a real education is. I was fascinated to hear a story about a guy that was on the Merv Griffin show, a bodybuilder. Now, Merv Griffin is way before Oprah. Merv Griffin is way before Phil Donahue. You probably don't even know who he is. I mean, way back in the 60s, 70s, way back then. This bodybuilder was on the Merv Griffin show. And he was, you know, I'm not going to embarrass myself, but he was doing all the poses and stuff, you know, highlighting certain muscles. And he would highlight a muscle here. And Merv Griffin would say, wow, why do you develop that? And he'd go, and Merv Griffin said, no, what is that muscle used for? Guy didn't know. And he'd go, like, whoa, look at that. What's this muscle used for? Why do you develop that? And the guy went, you know, here I am doing it. He didn't know. And finally, after about 2 minutes of Merv Griffin constantly asking the bodybuilder, why do you do that? Why do you develop that particular muscle? And not knowing, the bodybuilder finally got frustrated and they just kind of quit that segment. Folks, do you know why you're getting an education? If it's not to understand better the God of the universe, if it's not better to understand the world that He's created and to have a more intimate relationship with Him, it will be futile. It will be empty. There are actually people who get their education and despise the effort that they made to get it because it's so empty. Life without God is like an unsharpened pencil. There is no point. Life without God is like an unsharpened pencil. There is no point. And folks, you all have access. Man, we have trouble in America getting people to get excited about their education. And we live in a time where knowledge is just right there. I mean, you can know anything you want to know within 10 seconds. My son absolutely floors me. He's got one of these smartphones, which I'm an idiot, so I figure I'm disqualified from owning one. But he has one of these smartphones. One day we were talking about what it would be like to be a punter in the Dallas Stadium. You know, it's got the big scoreboard over there, and how high you'd have to kick a ball in order to hit the scoreboard. And my son says it was 90 feet. And then we started thinking, well, I wonder how many times that scoreboard gets hit by a punt. It's been hit 3 times in the last so many years. I mean, anything we wanted to know, we could know. Do you understand that smartphone... Listen carefully. Do you understand that smartphone has more information, more power, more available knowledge than NASA had in 1969 to go to the moon? And what do we do with it? I learned yesterday that there is actually an app that you can... It's a Duck Dynasty app. How many of you have already seen this app? Here's what you do. You take a picture of some loved one, and you go to this app, and it'll automatically put a Duck Dynasty beard on them. Listen, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s where we crave... We would have salvated for something. I had to pay $1 an hour to use HP's first calculating calculator that did square root. I had to pay $1 an hour to use it because otherwise I had to go to the science lab and check out sometime at 2 o'clock in the morning because I was a freshman and freshmen didn't get priority in using their calculator that was locked up in the lab. I had to pay $1 an hour to use this kid down the hall's HP calculator that did square roots. You are spoiled! We're using the technology that takes Ben to the moon, and we're putting beards on people. Does not Solomon speak to you? That is empty. That's like taking a Lamborghini and making it a flower pot. Please, folks, understand what the God of the universe... Listen, in Western culture, we have a problem in thinking that God is irrelevant. And God is revealing himself in higher and higher and higher levels of revelation of his majesty, of his glory, of his power, his omniscience. And we're putting beards on people with that information. Have we lost our minds? Real wisdom, real knowledge that will really change the world must begin with the fear of the Lord. If it begins with your own entertainment, if it begins with your own self-glorification, we'll continue to put beards on our loved ones. And that will be a sad way for civilization to go down the tubes. Worship point is this. When you really know what you need to know about knowing, when you really know what you need to know, your knowing will drive you to worship the one who allows you to know what you know. When you really know what you need to know, your knowing will drive you to worship the one who allows you to know what you know. My spiritual challenge is this. Think about what eternal value and benefit your knowledge has. Think about those things you know only to impress others with what you know. Think about how many times you build yourself up in the eyes of others by what you know rather than using what you know to make life better for others. Use your knowledge and wisdom to love and build up others. Not yourself. Those of you who are Hillsdale College students, I firmly believe you're receiving a good education. But let me warn you of something. How do you know? If you were here last week, and I'm going to beat this drum again from now until we're done with Ecclesiastes and well beyond that, the only way you know if something is good if it fulfills the purpose for which it was intended. But what is the purpose of your education? If the purpose of your education is to make six figures, and if the purpose of your education is in order to give you a plaque that everybody can go ooh and ah with, then Hillsdale will give you a good education. And there's a lot of other institutions that can do the same thing. But folks, the God of the universe says, no, your education must mean more than just financial benefits and status. Your education ought to be to help you to understand Him and your place in this world and how you can be a part of allowing God's will to be done here on earth as it is in heaven. And if you are not, if your education is not taking you in that direction, then I'm convinced you're not receiving a good education. Because that's what education should be doing for us. I want to close with a quote that is, unfortunately, fortunately it's on the back of your sermon outline, but unfortunately, I somehow edited out the reference. It's from a person that I believe has just as much insight and is just as precious to the kingdom of God in the 20th century as was C.S. Lewis. His name is Harry Blaymeyers, and he wrote a book called On Christian Truth, which I drooled over every page. He has this to say about education. And I'm going to read it from the back. I know this is long, but folks, this is just right on. Listen carefully to what Harry Blaymeyer says about education to become what it means to get a good education. What it means to allow your education to serve the purpose for which education is to serve, and that's to make you more like Christ. Here's what he says. We alone of living beings have to cooperate in making ourselves, in gaining for ourselves true existence. Even certain common idioms show our awareness of this truth. G.K. Chesterton once observed that you might slap a man on the shoulder who was drinking too heavily and say, "Be a man." But it would be pointless to tell a recalcitrant crocodile to be a crocodile. It can't fail to be a crocodile. But we can fail to be men and women, fail to be human. For the human being is made in God's image to love and serve his maker and his fellows. And if a thing fails in its essential purpose, it fails to exist. A fire which fails to burn is not a fire. A seat which collapses when you sit on it is, for all practical purposes, no longer a seat. That is why we need education while animals do not. A lamb will skip about on its legs soon after it is born. A human baby needs two or more years and a good deal of patient tuition to get to that stage. We have heard about a child brought up in India among wolves walk naturally on all fours. It is within the choice of any of us to walk or not walk. A lamb separated from its mother and its flock and brought up as a domestic pet might make a very nice tame companion, but it would not begin to walk on two legs even if you tried to teach it. Nor would it forget its bleeding and learn to speak. Men and women can virtually turn into animals. But even faithful, friendly dogs and horses stop well short of turning into human beings. The better they are as dogs and horses, the more we like them. And the more human beings are, the more we approve of them. Education is, or ought to be, the process that turns us into fully human beings, which means that it will try to turn us into the beings God made us to be. It is a grave thing to say, but secular education is a contradiction in terms. True education would try to mold us into the image of Christ. It would insist that no progress in any sphere of knowledge or activity can be a substitute for learning to know, to love, and to serve God. And such knowledge, such love, and such service are the gifts of grace. By grace are you saved, St. Paul said. By grace alone can we be human. That is why civilization is now in danger of returning to the jungle. Karl Marx said that Christianity is the opiate of the people. It's a Karl Marx, right? Listen, folks, I think nothing could be further from the truth. Tim Keller said that Christianity is the smelling salts of the people. It wakes us up to the reality of everything that's around us. It wakes us up to the power of the internet. It wakes us up to the power of radiation research. It wakes us up to the power of microbiology. It wakes us up to the power of architecture. It wakes us up to the power of music. It wakes us up to the power of every discipline. And every discipline can be used to make money. And by the way, boy, there's another rabbit trail I could rip. Bring her in, Keith, bring her in. Be careful of research that is done by a company with an agenda. I'm sick of people telling me eggs are good, eggs are not good, eggs are good, eggs are not good. I don't even care, I'm going to eat the blasted eggs. Can I get a witness? Oh, you've been there too. We need to wake up and realize that a lot of what we get as education, as information, as facts, have come with an agenda. And we need to understand that the God of the universe wants to wake up to the reality of what life can be if we'll live in harmony with His purposes and His plan and His knowledge that can only come by the fear of the Lord. This is an important message. Because our culture is moving us entirely away from this mindset. And it's up to us as believers to spread the message that unless we make the fear of the Lord the beginning of our wisdom, the beginning of our education, the beginning of our knowledge, kids will continue to look at their education as not worth the bother. When it should be the passion of our hearts. And don't you dare be one of those people who only read one book between the time you graduate and the time you die. As your pastor, I'm telling you, that should never be. This is my Father's world. And I will seek to find out as much about it as I can in the limited time that I have and the limited time that I'm available. But folks, I love reading National Geographic. I love reading Scientific America. I love reading Popular Science. I love, and they're pagan magazines, because they're still showing me the glory of God. And the heavens and the earth reveal to us God in His majesty. If you have the fear of the Lord at the beginning of your wisdom. Let's pray. God, I am I'm so sorry I didn't know this earlier in my life. I'm sorry for the years of education that I wasted because I looked at it as the hoops I needed to get through in order to get to something else. Instead of understanding that every learning opportunity is another moment to worship You. God, I pray that our learning, our education, would not be filled with sorrow and grief, but would be moments of ecstasy, moments of worship, moments of adoration, as we understand more and more Your wisdom, Your power, Your grace, Your great love for us, to create a world like we enjoy, that is filled with so marvelous, so many marvelous things. God, forgive us when we've used our education and our knowledge as a sheer means for self-promotion. Help us to allow the fear of You to be the beginning of our wisdom and knowledge. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.